We'd like to welcome everyone this morning to the study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, August 16th, 2012. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you all had a nice break, an eventful break. But now it's time to get back to the excitement mixed with drudgery of everyday life. Well, life is like that, right?
Thank you. Box of chocolates.
First item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday night's regular council meeting. So if you would go to page 2, start with items 3A through 3C. Items 3D through 4B. Yes, Councilman Richens.
Can we go back to the liquor license? I didn't bring in, there's part of the report I had it printed out, but there's let's skip the guys up there. One of them, I think it was A&E Marketer. It was one of these two, and I'd have to look at the notes. I apologize. I forgot. I left them in my car. One of them had quite a few calls for service issues, and I wanted to know how they were doing. I mean, we put a new convenience store line that was supposed to address some of those issues. And again, do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, let me check that real quick. Is it the A&E market?
It's one of these two.
Okay.
I can pull it up. It's in the report. There's a lot of calls there. It looked like it was on that list of high offenders, and I just wanted to confirm that things are getting better because the trend didn't look like it was.
Morning, Mayor and Councilmember Richens. On the A&E market, they're showing 85 for, and that's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's almost a 6-year time frame. So it's 85 calls for service total. The ones that I kind of look at, and then I'll kind of raise a flag if I see it, is the more so the ones that have the reports written. It's on the bottom of that sheet. And they're showing 20 for that 5-year period. They've got three.
It's the M&M mark.
Oh, A&M?
Yeah, go to M&M.
Oh, M&M, okay.
M&M.
Sorry.
The one at 1155 South.
There we go.
Club. 237.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of difference, yes.
Yeah,
237.
No, the candy.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
Yes, M&M is showing 237 for that same time frame. They've got 17 year to date.
And so we put in a new convenience store ordinance, and it looked like sometime in 2010 they quit making shoplifting calls. If you notice, in 2009 they had 20 shoplifting calls, and then they just quit calling. And seeing statistics like this can be disturbing. Sure. What's going on there? Is our convenience store ordinance working? And is there a problem at this store that needs to be addressed through approving or not approving a liquor license application?
I think that might be something that's...
So are the police here? Maybe the PD want to come talk about this? Because it doesn't seem to me like it's, their crime trend is on the same track as it was last year. And I'm just wondering if this new convenience store ordinance is actually doing anything for you.
Good morning, Mayor. Morning, council member. I don't have the data on those specific stores right now, but we can come back and give you an update on all the top the stores that were included into the ordinance, and we can give you an assessment. I don't have that data with me right now.
Yeah, I appreciate the PD. They put together a nice spreadsheet that had all the call data on it, and it's a pretty big number. It was a little disturbing. So if we have a problem with this place, should we be recommending additional liquor licenses for them to continue to operate?
I guess that's a question for the council.
I think it's a fair question.
I guess the one thing I'd like to point out, if I may, though, too, is, and I look more so at the report's written section, and the one thing that I thought was impressive with them, at least anyway, is that in 2009 they had 27 reports actually written. Then they went down to 6, 10, and we're only at 2 this year. So I'm seeing improvement, and there's some dramatic
well, to
improvement.
To me, it seems like they just quit reporting shoplifting and their numbers dropped. Because you had 20 shoplifts on 2009 and then zero on 2010.
I don't want to speak for the police department so they can look at that, but I from what I've kind of heard from some of the people out there when I asked those questions, is that they just feel that they're not going to report them because there's not enough benefit in the time taken to report it versus the time getting it back.
And that was my concern with the convenience store.
They're just not reporting some of those because...
Mayor and Councilmember Richens, the effectiveness of the ordinance has been seen in those stores that are complying, that are actually making efforts to have lighting, so that
is
has
the store
been
making that effort? That's what I want to know.
I will have to pull the report on that specific store, because we have done an assessment on it, and I can tell you what improvements they have made. I just don't have that data with me right
Before
now.
Before I recommend, I'm going to vote to recommend this, I need to see that data. Sure. I need to know these guys are making improvements. Is that fair? I mean, I... So I'll let you figure out how to agendize it. Thank you.
Well, we got Monday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Coming up, so I'm assuming they can get that information for you before the meeting Monday. Okay, anything else? Items 3D through 4B? 4C through 4E? Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, item 4C, the court system, new computer system. When you go into the details, the system itself is not expensive. I mean, not expensive. Compared to a home computer, yes, but it's a big court system, so I understand. But, like, the hardware itself is, like, $100,000, but the install, training, et cetera, was $600,000, and I just don't get that. I don't understand. So, please.
Well, there's certainly a lot of detail. I don't know how deep you want to get into those details. This has been reviewed by city IT extensively. Mm-hmm. The details have been hammered out over the last several months, actually. It took us a long time to get to where we're at with this. There was a difference in some of what they estimated that they would do for us specifically for Mesa in terms of the costs and so on. So we really drove to get this within, I think, the minimum cost for what they're going to do. There's a lot involved in terms of conversion. We spent a lot of time estimating what it would cost on their end and our end to do the conversion of all the old data into the new system. It's just an expensive proposition. They gave us rates that are below what they quote normally nationally, because this is a bit of a pilot project in terms of developing their national products, so they're giving us a cut rate on some things. So there was a lot of work and effort that went into this piece that we're seeing here. The master contract, of course, is with the Supreme Court and AMCAD. They've got $2.5 million invested in that. We are the lead court, as I have previously reported, to counsel. That gives us the primary say in how the thing gets designed and developed. So it's very Mesa-specific to begin with, and the other courts in the state will really be using our procedures once we finish this. This contract here is more or less a subcontract under that master contract that does Mesa-specific things that we need unique to us to be a part of this project. So
how did we come up with, you know, we just quoted for that system. So was there a lot of pre-work with that we don't know about, that you went out nationally looking for systems that you like, then you wrote an RFP for this system? You know, because it's always interesting when you don't actually, you know, these are the things we need to do. Let's do an RFP and see who responds. Instead, we said, you know, sole source with this vendor. So what kind of work went into that?
The background to that, I think, if that's what you're asking,
yes.
The Arizona Supreme Court contracted on behalf of all courts in the whole state. So they did, several years ago, an extensive RFP process. There's a lot of very unique and different processes in Arizona, so the search for a vendor was quite extensive, as you might imagine. The first major project was to do the superior courts and general jurisdiction courts, which they did, I think, concluding around 2007-2008. The second major piece of this was to do the limited courts, which included the justice courts and the municipal courts around the state. So it was a two-phased development and rollout. So the contract's actually been in place. The RFP process and the vetting of vendors and all of that took place several years ago by the Arizona Supreme Court, and the master contract is for all courts in the whole state. An advantage for us in that is that typically you pay for licensing for every user. All that licensing cost and all of that fundamental cost is borne by the Supreme Court and extends to us, so there's a lot of costs that we don't have to face as a result of operating under that master contract. The best thing for us was that we were in a position, because we've advanced technology so far in the Mesa Court, and developed our processes so extensively, the Supreme Court said Mesa Court is the ideal court for dictating what processes should be developed in the new system for the rest of the lower courts around the state. So that was quite a compliment to us, but quite a challenge in for us taking on this and working this for the rest of the courts in the state. We've been at it 14 months. August 10th was the deadline for basically handing over all of our functional requirements to AMCAD to build the operational version, which we will see the first version of that after the first of the year. As a part of that continuum, we need those things that are specific to Mesa, which are reflected in this contract. Does that help answer?
Well, it helps. Again, it was like 6 to 1, the cost difference from the hardware to the actual training install, and it just seemed really high. And travel from Virginia, that was interesting. So,
If you can take my word for it, we drove the hardest bargain we could.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Because we're pulling from grant funds to pay for this, which are limited. So I really had to bring this within the context of the grant funding that's available. And so we weren't, on our side, that generous in what we were offering. So we've been at it for several months driving a very hard bargain on this.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Anything else, 4C through 4E? 4F through 4H? 4I through 4L. Councilmember Higgins?
I have a question on 4L. And the report basically says because we use a certain pump that only has proprietary components, we have to go with the proprietary vendor. So have we ever looked at, like, long-term costs of changing out? I don't know anything about pumps. But changing it to like a more standard pump that would have parts that you could change out, and what the payback period of that would be over time. And I know we have a lot of them, so per pump it's not expensive, but when it says we have to buy from this vendor because, it's always a question.
Right. Good morning, Mayor, Council members. The short answer is yes, we do look at that. But pumps don't tend to be widgets. Each pump manufacturer tends to have his own design with his own parts that is meant to solve particular problems like cavitation in certain applications, so they don't tend to be interchangeable. We have had some problems with the Hayward Gordon pumps in this application, but they have been working with us very diligently because they want to keep our business and they're trying to do their best. It's a very difficult application. This is moving not the good stuff at the wastewater treatment plant. This is moving the solids and the plastics and the rags and the things that get in the process. So it is a very difficult environment, and they are working with us. But over the last couple years in particular, we've been much happier with the pumps and with the service that we've been providing.
So you're saying any, like if we went to vendor A, C, or D, they all have that proprietary stuff? They're
not interchangeable? Not every single one, but for the most part, that is the case. Like, for example, you'll see in our submersibles, we tend to use flight pumps because they tend to be better for those applications. And yeah, for the most part, the parts are not interchangeable. So generally, when you go through the design process, you decide what type of pump is best for your application, and you go with that manufacturer.
Kind of like a car. We can't buy a Honda part to go into the Ford. It's not going to work.
Right.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Sorensen. And I wrote that down. Pumps are not widgets. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. Yeah. Glad I could help, Mayor.
Great revelation. Appreciate that. 4M, 4N. 4O through 5B. 5C through 5G, 5H through 6B, 7A through 8A. Yeah, Councilmember Fenter.
With regard to 7A, this is in District 2. I've been working with Mr. Wesley and their staff to see if we could work with these folks on calls for service, seeing if they might be able to participate in the city's police department's TriStar program. Last year, they generated about 350 calls for service, and we thought maybe this is a good time to work with them to see how they could come in I think it's great to keep them on track and maybe work with them, and Mr. Wesley might have more with regard to that. But.
Mayor and Council, we have had some preliminary discussions with the developers of this project. They have expressed willingness to be part of that program, but we haven't got a definitive answer back from them at this point. We'll have that information for you on Monday.
So I thought, Mayor, if we could maybe keep it on track and then hear from them Monday and look for the opportunity to have them participate.
Okay. Follow up on that, make sure we get that report on Monday. Okay. Anything else? Long agenda. How come when you leave to go on vacation, it's miserable the first week, and then when you come back?
It's miserable again.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Brady. We appreciate that. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, better known as NSP, and this is NSP 3.
If we can get anything from 2.
Ms. Albright.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. What we wanted to do this morning was give you an overview of the NSP 1 success and then talk about moving forward with NSP 3. Where's the little thing that you hit?
I think you just hit enter. Are you done? Oh, okay. You mean the...
For the slideshow.
I think you double-click it. Just double-click it.
Ray Temish is our grants coordinator for this program, and so he's going to give you the overview.
Regarding NSP 1, I'm just going to cover that one really quickly and go over some of the success stories that we've had there. We received $9.6 million in 2009, basically to renovate vacant and foreclosed properties. In certain designated areas, we had designated the 85204 zip code as our area of focus. The purpose of that was to bring the houses back available, make them marketable, as well as try to stabilize the property values in the area. We had certain time frames in which we had to meet. One of those was an 18-month commitment of all the funds. We did meet that commitment. We even expended 90% of it before the deadline. Of those expenditures, 39,000 homes were purchased and rehabilitated.
Nine.
39 homes were purchased and rehabilitated. Long day. 29 homes have been sold to date. We have another one under contract. $2.7 million in program income has been generated on that project. In the rental properties, we purchased 10 properties. Total of 33 units. 22 of those units went to the Mark Center, and 11 of those units went to Save the Family. We also joined with City of Phoenix to do a permanent supportive housing, a 20-unit project on 444 South Horn. This is a partnership with A&A Cottages, which is a part of New Leaf, and the City of Phoenix. Contributed over $900,000 to the project. We had over $150,000 contribution in that project. It is, I think they just got the release to proceed with the rehabilitation of that project. On an average, we're spending about $77,000 for each home to rehabilitate it. We're spending about $50,000 per unit when it comes to the multifamily projects. Average time frame to property purchase to completion of rehab is about 3.5 months. The rehab for, once we get the rehab done and trying to get the property back available for sale, we're having a quick turnaround time now, but in the past we've gone through some ups and downs, you might say, but there is a lot of demand right now. We have over 50 applicants ready to buy. Unfortunately, with the HOC closing their doors, we are in need of counselors, so we have an RFP that's going to be going out hopefully this month to get new counseling on board so we can continue that process. During the rehabilitation process, we meet with the contractors. We develop a pool of contractors. We hold these meetings twice a year. For the most part, get their qualifications. We tried to focus on pulling in the local contractors as much as possible. However, we cannot limit to that. We also reach out to small businesses, which are designated. We try to designate them as Section 3 businesses. We also reach out to the minority and women-owned business as well. HUD has a lot of programs that they offer that really encourage this. We have to report on this information. They want to see those successes there.
A Section 3 business is a low-income owner.
So. Or a business that employs low-income or low-income families or households. With the NSP 3, it basically is the same objective: to stabilize the neighborhoods. It's for the purchase of foreclosed properties, get them back available on the market. There is time frames associated with that. We are coming up on one of our deadlines here, and we need to take action quickly. There is a 50% expenditure in the 2 years. Our deadline here is March 13th. I don't anticipate any problems reaching that. We can purchase a lot of property that's out there right now. We are confined to a smaller area, though. That is problematic for us. So we're going to have to look at what's there. We are confined to 6 zip codes. 5 of those are located very closely to the 85204 zip code or within that area, but some of them go outside, just outside those borders. And the other census tract is located between Dobson and Alma School, just south of Broadway. It's a little neighborhood right there.
Great. Councilman Higgins.
So that's all census tract related. You can only use this money in a certain census tract.
That is correct.
And there's only 6 in the city? That's good to
hear. There are 6 that had a rating of 20. They told us to pick the highest concentrations, so those had the highest concentrations. There's other census tracts that did, but in order to meet the objectives that they had, you had to purchase so many homes within those census tracts. So,
can you spend money in close, like whatever that number means, scores of 18 or 16? Or
we can. Okay. We can. If we have to, we'll go outside. If we can't find houses there, we just have to amend our substantial amendment, and we can go outside those areas.
And the whole concept to me, I mean, looking for houses, we're looking for neighborhoods to stabilize, right? So,
well, that's why they wanted us to focus on smaller areas. And actually, they break it down into blocks this time. So we're looking at those blocks. If you look at the census tract, that's in between Elm School and Dobson and south of Broadway. We actually focus on blocks within that census tract. So,
okay, great. Thanks.
Councilman Richens.
Just have a quick question on your timeline. Help me understand the 50% expenditure in 2 years. March 2013 is 8 months from now.
Yeah.
Not 2 years. Did this program start in 2011?
It started a while.
12 or
yeah, it started a while back. We have not done anything with it. One of the things is we're going through some TA that HUD was providing, very lengthy TA.
Technical assistance.
Technical assistance. Sorry.
You can deposit your quarter on the way out.
Yeah, we've been going through some TA for several months through that process. That was to address some of the new changes. This is a new program, so it's constantly changing. So we had some TA come in and provide us some of the technical assistance to look at our procedures, write out a manual, get us on track that we should be following. Wanted additional details, additional information needed to be provided. Additional documentation is what they're telling us we had to do. So.
Here's where I'm going to leave the PowerPoint just a little bit. Really what we're looking for today is some direction. We have ran into a little bit of an issue in that with the program, we have to follow local, state, and federal procurement processes. And in some cases, they actually conflict. So we're being creative, trying to figure out how to deal with the difference between the state and the federal. And as late as last night, we had ideas coming. We were kicking around ideas on that. So at this point, we have presented one option in our PowerPoint, but at this point, we would probably recommend that we go back as staff, deal with several different options, because even if we do an option like a job order contracting, we're being told by HUD that's not acceptable, but we're talking with engineering to be creative that we may be able to shift it a little bit. It would still have to be approved by HUD. come back with some ideas to one of the committees, one of the council committees, kind of ferret all that out before we come back to council on dealing with our local procurement issues.
When you say they conflict, I'm assuming since HUD monies are involved, at the end of the day, you have no choice on the federal.
We have no choice on either.
Well,
we have to comply.
Let me get there, okay?
Yeah, okay.
But you do have a choice. I mean, if we have a conflict, we can not take the money. But
yeah.
We really have no choice on the federal. I get it that
right.
that you may have a conflict with the local, but you really have no choice with
right.
the federal because you either follow the federal or you don't take the money. Is that accurate? So what we're saying is that the federal is sort of our baseline, and we have local and or state that conflict with our ability to comply with the federal. And is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, and conflict might not necessarily be the right word. It is possible to comply with all of them.
Okay.
It's just you're taking the time frame from about
okay.
3.5 months to about 6 months per house.
All right.
And a whole slew of staff
so
resources.
So what we're hearing, what I'm hearing then is that sometimes the controls, while well-intentioned, actually work against our ability to meet our program objectives.
Which is our time frames.
Okay, so the idea is to come up with a system that meets our control objectives
mm-hmm.
while allowing us to meet our program objectives.
Yes.
Okay, Councilmember Richens? Is that an accurate description?
Right.
Okay.
So we're open to any ideas that council members may have that we can pursue and, research. And, again, we're thinking maybe instead of this forum, we can
yeah.
kind of ferret that out.
Well, I think
one
if you could couch it in under those terms
yes.
and say, listen, here's let's say a city control, and we've talked a lot about our control and our approval process over the last year or so.
Okay.
It would be easy to say, listen, here's our city control, here's the issue it's creating for us, here's what we propose, where we can still meet the objective, the city objective, because when we put in these controls, there were very specific objectives that I think were laid out. There's multiple ways to achieve those objectives. And I think when you have any control, as we found out, there's no one. Controls are not widgets. I've learned that. And we can... controls are not pumps either. So, but there are various ways to skin that cat. Boy, how many cliches have I used today? I think if you could come to us, rather than ask us for just some general things so we can know what's happening, come to us and say, listen, here's where we have this conflict between control objectives and timing objectives, program objectives, and here's what we suggest, which we think meets our control objectives, because I don't know that we're too excited about lowering our control objectives just to meet a time, but I recognize there might be three different ways to accomplish this, and maybe we've only identified one slot to go through. So if you could do that for us,
sure.
That sound okay? And then, like you said,
yeah.
go to one of the subcommittees or whatever. I think that would probably be a good thing, because we get it that at the end of the day, and you, what you've talked about is having city manager more direct involvement.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a control issue, is increased management involvement. Is it control function? So I think you're on the right path.
Okay.
Does that sound okay to everyone?
Well, we would like to, though, go forward with two resolutions. One, to allow us to start expending the funds, and the second, to continue what we did in the NSP program, or NSP 1 program, and designate the city manager to the authority to sell the city properties, these homes. Again, that speeds up the process. So we'd like to still come forward with those two while we work on the procurement issues.
I don't know that theoretically we would have a problem, but I would have to see how we implemented our control issues. Were those in ordinance form or resolution form? And does it give us the leeway to be able to...
Well, the procurement is by ordinance, but I think Tammy wants to set that aside for now. In terms of the selling the homes,
okay.
the charter says it just has to be... The process or the terms have to be established by council. So if the council, through resolution, sets out the guidelines, the city manager can carry out those guidelines.
So, okay, so right now, what is the resolution? What is the status quo, and what are we asking to change? What are you asking to change?
We're asking to go back to the way it is, what the council's previously approved under the other two programs, the other program, where the city manager can set, once we acquire.
Now, is this just a matter of reapproving this and applying it to the new program?
To the new program.
Okay,
exactly.
So this isn't a change.
No.
This is saying that because this is the number three, you're asking for approval to.
For NSP3.
Okay. To apply the same control on the sale of the property as we did on 1 and 2.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Fender?
And I had the opportunity to meet with staff and kind of work through, you know, looking at the new way that we asked for a kind of a check and balance to come through the council. And the goal was never to add another layer of bureaucracy, and there's so many in this. This is also a temporary program when you look at NSP. This is not going to be a recurring thing. So I thought it was quite a reasonable request to have them go back to one. But they were also very open to making sure that through our quarterly reports, letting us know where that spending is. So I think it achieves all the goals, and it gets it streamlined and helps them through a very bureaucratic process. So I was real supportive of going that route.
Okay, so on the go ahead.
I just wondered, we're just talking about that right now. Are we going to maybe have an opportunity to discuss what we're going after, or that's all set in stone also?
We can discuss that. Yeah, we definitely can discuss.
Okay, because I just wondered, you know, in those areas, if you see like the couple fourplexes that are bringing down the whole neighborhood instead of like, you know, looking for the one single family home, if that's a better tack to take, I don't know. I think it's something that maybe we can, it'd be nice to discuss because, you know, those big things kind of can take down a whole neighborhood.
Councilor Fender?
Well, we've had quite a bit of discussion, and I think there's a great policy choice maybe down the road, although it might cause some challenges for staff to kind of relook at their application. And maybe if you had just a moment to tell how our current NSP application is, I think it's 18 single-family homes and then 4 or 5 multi-resident kind of approaches. And the theme I was trying to promote, and so I appreciate Councilmember Higgins mentioning it, with the change in the single-family market, what's going on now, how do we best achieve with that limited resource to impact a neighborhood? And I was giving him the example that the mayor, myself, and past Councilmember Jones went to there at Williams and Broadway. Very challenging area around Reed Park, but the purchase of that one complex there on the corner, and then working in cooperation with what's the name of the group?
Mark
Center. Wonderful change where you took a multifamily complex and have had a huge impact on the surrounding neighborhoods. So I'm trying to promote the theme of maybe the monies that we would spend on a single family residence versus taking those funds and putting it to multifamily might have a greater impact on a wider area. So that was the theme I've been pushing.
Can I ask a question? Thank you. But you had said something that our application. So are we bound by our application with the government to buy 18 single-family homes?
Well, we have to change our substantial amendment.
Yeah, just okay. There's recollection, when we started this program, mm-hmm.
Yes,
it was a high priority council for us to move to homeownership in the neighborhoods. Right. I think there's a concern about the stability within the neighborhoods and making sure that we were promoting that through homeownership. So that's the application reflects that priority. Now that doesn't mean we can't change it, but just understand when we go to HUD, we have to represent to them kind of our game plan, which is what we did.
As I recall, though, it was both a priority, but I don't know that we differentiated the type of unit as much as it was the business we wanted to be in, which was to restoring neighborhoods without getting into the rental business. And we had partners who actually came to us, like Mark and a New Leaf, with, for example, that one by Reed Park. They were the ones, as I recall, and I may be wrong on this, they were the ones that drove that process because they were in place, and we had already hooked up with an agency that was going to operate that afterwards. So the goal was accomplished that we put money into the neighborhood, but we stayed out, we meaning the city, stayed out of the rental business. And so I don't know which was the cart and which was the horse, because I don't know, I can't remember exactly whether Mark, for example, came to us and said we have this unit we'd like in this program, or whether we identified units and went out and found Mark.
Which way did that
work? Well, under if you're talking about that particular complex, yeah. My understanding is Mark Center approached us about
what I remember.
A fourplex unit.
Yeah.
That was used in CDBG funds, though.
Well, I know, but it's the same. It's a similar approach as whether yeah. which type of property we're going to get into. Because
right.
I think that what's being said is we want to accomplish the overall goal, which is to stabilize a neighborhood.
Right.
There are certain neighborhoods where we can get more bang for the buck if we look at some of these fourplexes and sixplexes, you know, small multifamily that really have a great ability to drag an entire neighborhood down. Our secondary objective, and I think the council was pretty clear on this, that we didn't want to get in the rental business. So the idea is, how do we balance those? And my question is if we're going to balance those and meet the second objective, we need an agency like a Mark Center, whether it's through CDBG or NSP or however we do it, it would seem like we need to have that sort of put in place. Otherwise, we're running the risk that we're going to end up with a fourplex, and then all of a sudden we're going to be asked to start managing the rental of that.
Yeah.
And I think we were pretty clear that that's not where we wanted to go as far as a long-term strategy. We have enough challenges managing what we have without getting into the rental business. And I think with, you know, Escobedo and things like that, the city made it very clear that that's not an activity that we wanted to be involved in long-term, because it's not what we do best. It distracts us. There are others who do it much better. So to get back to what we're talking about here, if we identify these multi-unit, these multifamily units, which might have the most impact on neighborhood, do we have to have, or do we strive to have an agency up front, or how do we do that?
We can talk to the agencies. I don't think there's going to be any problem with any of the agencies accepting these. A lot of nonprofits are looking at rental properties, Mark Center, Save the Family, New Leaf, even Community Bridges is looking for properties for that purpose.
Okay. Councilor Finter?
Well, so in a follow-up, the question I would say as a policy decision, I'll give you the example I gave the other day. Ingram and Center Street, HUD has a property. It's a fourplex, $80,000. The cities are first in line to be able to take that if they want it before it hits the market. Now, would we rather purchase something like that and in cooperation with Mark Center, get that and try and start making a difference down there? And heaven knows there's a lot of challenges on those streets there. Or do we do a single-family home someplace, you know, for a similar value? And I would, my argument would be that I would suggest that that would be the greater good for those funds. So I'm hoping that we, you know, as policy, we look at maybe moving away from those single-family homes where there's a tremendous amount of private sector pressure. Things are really happening that weren't happening during the time frame of NSP1, but have now dramatically changed, and see that we kind of move those funds towards those kind of properties that impact us so greatly.
Now, but what I'm hearing, though, is that we have to predefine
we have defined areas where we're working at.
Dollar amounts. If we have
and dollar amounts, too, yeah.
Let's say we have $1 million. We have to write up front in our application, say, if we had $1 million, we want $300,000 for multifamily and $700,000 for single family. And then once we apply for that, if some opportunities came up for multifamily, could we amend that application?
We can amend it. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
So we're not fixed. We're not set once we get approval on the first part. If other opportunities came up for, let's say, a fourplex, we had an agency, we could go back and say we want to amend that from $300,000 to $600,000.
It is a process that we have to go through,
okay.
Public comment, public meetings, as well as advertisement and approval by HUD.
So we could do it. I think the point is, I don't know if you want to do it for every property, so we just want to be careful.
It's better if you have it up front. It'd be nice if we had a great idea.
Currently, we have to purchase, I believe, it's 16 units total of rental property. It could be four fourplexes and a total of like 18 homes. That's what we have currently set. If we change this, I will say you're going to probably throw out some of the census tracts we've already designated, because it's primarily residential and there are no rental properties there. We also have a lot of applicants that we'll have to address that issue with them, because now they don't have housing that would be available to them. And that's a lot of them have gone through these programs anticipating purchasing homes. So,
well, I agree with you on one part, but on the other thing, if we look for as in NSP1, we still got 10 homes we haven't sold. So
yep.
I don't think we have an oversupply. When you get down to it, you may have applicants, but the question is our ability to both rehab those homes and get to a closing. And we know that the number of applicants isn't always right in line with what we have available. Otherwise, we wouldn't have 10 homes that we're still trying to sell, would we?
And changing some of the areas. Again, it's just a substantial gotcha. Amendment. It is a process, but if we find that we wanted to target some of the rentals in this area didn't, we can look at some of those other scores. The scores represent the foreclosure rate in that area?
Scores represent rating that they looked at subprime loans as well as foreclosures in the area.
And so we could go to like.
And that creates a weird dilemma because you could actually have a really bad area with a bunch of slumlords who haven't been foreclosed, and that area would not score.
Yeah.
That would not score high
exactly
in,
so.
For this program.
Right.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Okay.
But I should clarify one other. The resolution is slightly different that we're looking at to allow to designate the city manager to sell the properties than the NSP1 in that. We have asked in that resolution that this apply to any residential property
right.
purchased and rehabbed with federal funds, not just NSP. The reason we are asking for that is with the closure of HOC, we are still looking at what status all those homes are in, but we did have at least one so far where the owner has lost it. Someone picked it up for a tax lien. We were able to get it back
yeah.
with minimal monies. We can put some home money in it and get it back out to a low-income owner and still comply with our HUD regulations.
So what you're asking for is the same process to apply to different pools of money?
For any residential.
For any program.
Yeah, okay. yeah any yeah. residential.
Right. But it would be this, just say have the same control
yes.
and approval regardless of whether it's home or
right.
NSP or whatever. Okay. All right. Do we have any issues or problems with that? Well, I mean, we're sort of digressing. Let's get back to the procurement. I think we're going to
take that to the
yeah. committee. On this approval, we need to, I guess, get
we'll
this,
just bring the resolutions. The other resolutions.
Since the direction is we'd apply the same approval process on NSP3 as we did for the first two programs. Any problems with preparing that resolution?
No.
Okay.
And then, Mayor, would you like maybe part of the conversation with the council committee to be further along a little bit more this conversation about the mix of the homes?
I think the issue's been raised, and I think there needs to be some clarification because the last thing you brought up as far as the census tracts and the standards that are used, I think changes my perception because it would be nice if we could go into Councilman Fender brings up some great examples of areas that I would love to be able to go in,
yeah.
Take the Calvary in there and do some really good work, but it just may not score because of the nature of the properties, and
right.
and that's sort of an interesting thing. But once again, this
this
program is geared more toward home ownership than it is the other thing, and I'd like to push it as far as we can because I really do believe that some of those small, I agree with Councilman Fender, some of those small fourplexes have an incredible ability to drag down areas much more than a single home does, and if we could somehow figure out a way to target those. But at the end of the day, once again, we started this thing out. Home ownership was our objective. I think it's the objective of the home. So I don't know where that takes us, Councilmember.
I just came to mind. Couldn't you make a fourplex a condo and actually end up with smaller condo home ownership for individuals?
I
don't know.
You could go through the process of doing a condominium. I mean, it is.
I'm just throwing that out.
It just takes
that would
a lot.
Be up to
it does take a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't know that we want to go down that.
I would like to throw out.
If you've ever done a condo, it's not an easy process.
I would like to throw out though. We do have home funds, and that can be used for that
okay.
purpose. We had designated in our annual action plan that $200,000 go to rental, $400,000 go to home ownership. We can change that too. That's a little more easier process to do. And it's not under such time frames as we have
yeah.
with
okay.
NSP3.
So we should be, I mean, if the members of council community have these larger properties that we think are having a significant impact and there's an opportunity, we should, whether it's NSP or something else, we should look
yeah.
at it.
And home doesn't limit us to certain census okay. tracts, and it doesn't limit us to just foreclosed properties. We can purchase any property.
Okay, Councilor Kavanaugh.
Yeah, again, along that line, I think we have other pots of federal money that we can use for those kind of problems, and we need to remember that this particular program is geared with a primary purpose for dealing with the effects of foreclosure
right.
on residential homes, and that the goal is to get those homes back into home ownership in the neighborhood. And that's why we have census tracts where we don't have the duplexes or things like that, but have the high scores. And so I think we're talking about different problems that we have in the community, yeah. and I think we have other options for dealing with them, and let's not diminish the value of the stabilization program funds.
To tack up on that, is it like that fourplex you said? Does this money allow us to like mow down the fourplex and put in a single family home that we could
under home? It does. You can do demolition and reconstruct as long as you build the same format.
You're not. So that would be no,
but
because
on the NSP,
it is for homeowners or it's for housing development only. You can't just demo it and leave it.
No. I don't mean that. I mean build. Like take the fourplex.
Oh yeah.
Get rid of it because it was fairly cheap and crappy, and then put in a single family home and have home ownership.
That would be diminishing it, and they wouldn't allow you to do that type
of
thing.
You can't. Diminish it so you can't demolish.
Downuse. That would be one big lot.
Yeah.
I think there are probably plenty of opportunities.
Or a couple houses.
In other words, I think Councilman Kavanaugh makes a good point that, you know, we're trying to make NSP a cure-all, and actually it is focused, and there are other areas that we can look at. So I don't know that this is necessarily a shift in what we want to accomplish. I appreciate the clarification that let's get back on NSP. Has a very, very narrow focus. There are other programs like HOME that would allow us to do as much as we can in that area. I think let's move ahead like what we're looking at, but also I think that the council's raised the issue that if we can find ways where we can maybe target some of these small multifamily things, that would be great if we can do that. Is that okay, Councilman Fender?
Yeah.
And I think we may even have some specific issues. Councilman Vinder brought up a specific property, for example. If there's some specific things, then we probably need to talk to Tammy and Ray and say, listen, would you look into that and see? Because we all know our neighborhoods and our districts pretty well, and we can, if we can identify those areas or those specific things, they can maybe target their activities toward that. Councilman Richards, you had a comment? Okay. Have we left it where we need to? Any other questions or comments on that? Okay, thank you. And we look forward to those follow-ups then. Item 2B, hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on Discovery Point.
No, that's the one we're
going to. Is that the one we're going to move off of?
Yeah,
that's right. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Not here. Skip over to item 2C, hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on combining human services and human advisory boards.
I'm back. Okay. This is not a new concept. We've discussed this throughout the entire annual funding process, that this was something we wanted to come back and consider this an improvement, a streamline in our processes. So we're here before you now to start this process and try to establish a new board prior to starting this year's annual funding process. So currently we have the Human Services Board, and then we have the Housing Advisory Board. And in 2006, the boards were separated so that they could focus more on the two different issues. Over the time period, these boards have become just a funding board. I mean, they just hear the request for funding. But the process is so intertwined as far as the same agencies for the same projects might get human services funds as well as grants. So in an effort to make it a more holistic global view, we thought the best thing to do would be to combine these boards and then take the board to a different level. One of the things that we need to start is the updating of our next five-year consolidated plan. It's about a two-year process. There's a lot of studies you have to do to determine what the needs are in Mesa, both from a human services standpoint, housing standpoint, economic development standpoint. and then start to define what the city's goals and objectives will be for the next 5 years. So we would like to use this board again to engage in that process, to hear those studies, help us determine where federal dollars should be spent in the future. So we are proposing a couple different things, though. We are proposing that this board be an 11-member board as opposed to the typical 7 or 9 that we have been dealing with in the past. We have taken this proposal to both the Human Services Board and the Housing Advisory Board, and they're all in support of this. They did make some minor tweaks. Were part of the ordinance would propose that at least 6 of the 11 members be housing representatives of some way, and the rest be community representatives, more for the human services side. For the most part, the duties would be the same as each board. We just combine them. But again, we really want to take this board to the next level. We want to use them for all kinds of different processes, policy issues, things we can, a sounding board where we can put those new ideas and those process improvements before we bring them, you know, on to council or subcommittee.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Well, thank you. Back in the deep mist of time in October 96, it was one of my early votes on council in supporting combining the boards. So I'm certainly glad to support your proposal to recombine them. Again, I think they're good arguments.
Mayor. Councilman Richens.
Yeah, this will really help streamline. It fits in with some of the reorganization we did on our council committees, too, and now we're starting to get some coherent track for policy issues to come through a board and commission and then to a council subcommittee and then to the council as a whole. And so I really like that approach for this. And I think it will really help streamline how we allocate our federal funds and keep the public involved as much as we can. So I'm supportive of this.
Councilor Higgins?
I think you meant cohesive, not coherent. They're always coherent. I think they're always coherent.
I didn't understand what you said.
The question I have actually is on slide number 8. It goes back a couple. And where it says, you know, we're giving them, I mean, we're talking about board duties here if we agree with this too, or are we going to talk about that later?
No.
Okay. So it basically says funds, blah, blah, can be allocated by them based on directed from city council or housing community development staff. So now we're actually giving authority to direct funds from staff to this other board. So that's part I wasn't overly happy with.
The reason that is in there because council has already done that with the last year's annual plan. Council approved 2 pots of home money, $200,000 to go towards rental, $400,000 to go towards home ownership, and they delegated as part of that annual plan the authority to which projects actually get that funding to the Housing Advisory Board. So we wanted to make sure we covered that authority still.
So you just made that, you made that, right?
We did not, but we could.
I guess the question is, last year we did it on a specific pot of money,
yes,
in a specific year. What you're proposing is that we embed it in the process to apply it to on an ongoing basis.
Well, and the reason we wrote this at the council's authority, so it would only be when council said that,
okay,
pot of money.
I just want to be clear that.
So it's subject to specific council,
right,
authority, but it's embedded,
right,
we don't have to redo the overall blanket authority.
Correct.
It's going to be embedded in this,
right,
in this board, but we have to pull the trigger.
You would still do it as part of the annual funding process.
Yeah, and just to remind everyone, the reason we did that is because instead of agencies coming in for some specific projects and getting allocations ahead of time, we're trying to put market forces into that acquisition process. And in order to do that, we had to make this change.
Right.
Well, and Councilman, it was also, they were competing for big, large sums of dollars.
Right. Yeah.
And there's limited dollars, and we weren't always sure whether they were going to be able to
spend them all.
So this way, you can make that evaluation.
Right.
So.
The other issue is the actual home rules have changed this year, and they really, HUD does not consider them committed until there is a specific project either.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, so we were kind of tracking with HUD, mm-hmm, in changing, making that policy change, because then HUD made it pretty much the same time.
Okay. So this allows us really to make sure that we can not only adjust to market, but we can also make sure that if we have a pot of money, we can use that pot of money rather than commit up front, and then if those projects don't go through,
right.
we're left.
We've got these balances that are
balances, and we might have other worthy projects sitting out there, but we haven't approved them. We sort of shot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, with the new system, we're developing an application process, which they'll come forward with site control, a performa budget, who the contractors are, who the developer team is. So it's ready to go.
All righty. I've heard positive comments. I'm seeing nods all the way around. So direction is to move forward. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item 2D is appointments, boards, committees. You've got a memo on two reappointments and four new appointments to advisory boards. We have a motion from the vice mayor, second from Councilmember Glover. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. A motion from Councilmember Higgins, a second from Councilmember Finter. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Hear reports of meetings and conferences attended. We did a lot. Okay, next item.
It was a busy summer.
We were busy during our break. Okay, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, we'll be meeting, continuing our getting back to the routine. Next study session will be Monday, August 20th. Right now, I think we're planning on starting at 5:15. We'll and then have the council meeting following that. Also, Mayor and Council, today we'll be giving you a finalized confirmation. We expect a fairly significant announcement for another destination for Gateway. Just going to give you a heads up. It looks like it's going to be Tuesday, 11 a.m., and we're going to do it at the Hilton Hotel. We've had a pretty good success at the Hilton Hotel announcement, so we're going to do another one there. So, now this is a destination, so, but it's a pretty significant destination.
See, you gave more than I did. The radio, I just said it was a big announcement.
Oh.
Big announcement.
Well, we're going to feed them just a little bit more every day.
Okay. Build it up. Okay. All right. Ms. Crocker, is there any requests to speak?
No requests, ma'am.
All right. We have a new e-session. To get the heck out of here and into there.
Yeah.
We have a convoluted and incoherent motion from the vice mayor to move into executive session. We have a very coherent second from Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are moving into executive session. Thank you.